1-877-4-HIT-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. So it's Friday already. Bummer. Those long 2 days are staring me straight in the eye. But there is no dearth of stuff to talk about this evening. Probably the single most important thing going on. Yes, yes, I know. We got another tape from back when Ayman al-Zawahiri went to a dead show somewhere near Philly. That's what the cough button's for, daggummit. So what? We got another ginned up, bogused up, screwed up, faked up tape from, ooh, scary stuff, Al-Qaeda. You know, I ain't buying. You buying? I ain't buying. But no. Now, what matters today is the hearings that transpired somewhere in the basement of the Capitol complex in Washington, D.C. You remember the hissy? Chris Matthews. Well, Hillary really stepped in it, didn't she? Calling the House of Representatives a plantation? Blah, blah, blah. Well, the hearings were, they were strictly partisan. Well, not really. Hearings convened by John Conyers because Sensenbrenner, that evil old coot, that half-insane, brain-dead freak from Wisconsin, wouldn't have hearings into excesses of Dear Leader. So John Conyers called his own. Now, bear in mind, the reason given was, well, we can't have hearings. The House of Representatives is not in session, dear hey, you know. So we can't have hearings. Okay, so nobody's using the hearing rooms upstairs, right? I mean, you know, the really beautiful ones with the baize covered tables and the ancient oaken paneled walls. You know, those hearing rooms, the ones we see when the Republicans want to have a hearing. Those weren't in use, were they? No, they weren't. So where did these hearings take place? Basement. Just like the last time John Conyers wanted to have a hearing. You know, John Conyers is of African descent, okay? He is among the leading lights in the Congress, as far as I'm concerned. But he's of African descent, and as a consequence, he got told he could have his little hearing in the basement. You don't get the good rooms. Get on down to the basement. And, of course, over on the Senate side of things, Ted Kennedy and Dick Durbin and Pat Leahy had wanted to just make a little floor address with regard to Sammy the Slime Alito. And Bill Frist has apparently gone all old school Tennessee on the Senate and wouldn't let either Kennedy or Durbin or Leahy make a speech on the floor of the Senate. Wouldn't let them reserve time to speak on the floor of the Senate. Shall we talk plantation? Let's all stand up and whistle Dixie. So, I don't know. I don't know if the Republicans are all caught up in aesthetics. No. But at any rate, it doesn't matter. These hearings that were held today could have been held anywhere. And frankly, it would not have changed the tenor of the truth that was spoken to power. And I almost said that these were partisan hearings. They weren't. We've got sound for you this evening from constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley. Jonathan Turley was among those who was out howling for the head of Bill Clinton during the impeachment proceedings over his consensual sex act. Okay? And also included in the lineup today was one Bruce Fine, Now, I remember Bruce Fein from back in the Reagan days. He was a deputy undersecretary, assistant attorney general, yada, 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 but a learned light, I suppose. The fact that he served under an evil, evil man can't be helped. But he is a Republican, through and through, and he participated in these hearings today. Now, far more sound than I have available is available at CanoFun, CanoFun.com. We watched the hearings today and rolled, well, we don't have any tape anymore. There is no more tape. But we rolled on it and got our little sound bites and whatnot. But you can go to CanoFun.com after the show is over. See how it works. And if you didn't catch it earlier today, you can get great amounts of sound and video from these proceedings. And they were stirring proceedings, stunning proceedings, courageous proceedings. Without a doubt, John Conyers has got to be, well, I don't know if he's listening right now, but I'm calling out our buddy Wayne to make John Conyers an honorary Serbian, because John Conyers was acting very, very much emboldened. And so were the witnesses. It made me tingling. Sometimes I sarcastically say, anybody want to stand up and sing the national anthem? I wanted to sing God Bless America, America the Beautiful, the National Anthem, and the Battle Hymn of the Republic, all at once, just watching these proceedings today. It didn't matter that the Republican plantation overseers had shuffled John Conyers off to the basement. It didn't matter. Because there was indeed truth spoken in Washington, D.C. today, and God knows that is a rarity in and of itself. So when we come back, some phone calls, and later in the program, we'll get into some of this sound. You could transcribe what went down today, and it would be the indictment of the President of the United States that is so desperately needed in these trying times. So let's take a break, come back, and your phone calls. The phone number, of course, is 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. 17 minutes and change after the hour. Let's go to the phones right away. Mitch is with us calling from California. Hey, Mitch, you're head on.
Hey, Bobby. Boy, how you doing today?
Doing good. You?
All right. Is this speakerphone all right?
It's a little tinny. If you could go to the earpiece, it would be better.
Okay, let me see what I can show you. That better?
Yeah, much better, much better.
All right, buddy. Yeah, listen, we were talking the other day, a little bit about this, and I just wanted to bring it up again, because I think it's really, really important, Bob. You know, we have this, this paper, this spying right now, and all this stuff is, becoming uncovered, and I think something very sinister has been going on that, we're not really aware of yet, and you could piece it together. There was an article in Capitol Blue, you read, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Capitol Hill Blue.
Capitol Hill Blue, that talked about it. Now, go on. Himself mentioned it in his speech when he talked about that today people can be picked up off the street, put in jail indefinitely without a lawyer, without their families being notified of their
right.
What happened. Now he said that he just brought that up. He just threw that out like offhandedly, and he said that today. He said this could happen today. And then the article in Capitol Hill Blue talks about laws that have already been signed. And that are already in place that at any time, George Bush, at his discretion, if he thinks it's warranted, can immediately suspend the elections, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and initiate martial law. And I think this issue is the most important issue. I mean, I think every other issue, and there are a lot of issues. I mean, there's Social Security, there's the bankruptcy laws, there's buying, or North Korea, even the war in Iraq, I told you before.
This is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the issue, Mitch. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You're right insofar as Al Gore seems to get it. And some of it was brought out today in the hearings in the basement there at the Capitol that John Conyers held.
Lawless man.
Yes, he is.
A Kucinich Connors is ticket.
Oh.
In a dream. But
I was going to say, I dare not even dream.
Right, exactly.
But at any rate, it was touched upon some there, Mitch. But the point, Bruce Fein, who was from the Reagan administration, I mentioned in the opening of the show, he talked about the fact that if George Bush's people's legal analysis of the powers of the president are allowed to stand, that there is no reason that George Bush could not suspend the writ of habeas corpus, should he so desire. And that's exactly what we're talking about here.
I mean, right now, we're not talking about somewhere down the line. We're talking about tomorrow, today, yesterday. I mean, people might be disappeared already that we don't even know about.
Precisely.
And, and look how carefully, Bob, look how carefully they place their pieces. While they're distracting us, right? While they're distracting us, they put all their, like on a chessboard.
Yeah.
They got the FCC. They got the Supreme Court. They got the Attorney General. They got the World Bank. I mean, slowly but surely, they just put all their little pieces in place. And we're sitting here, and you look around,
and the only,
they're everywhere.
And the only thing that stands between us and them, Mitch, is Congress. And that terrifies the life out of me, because very few members of Congress want to even be Congress anymore. That's another one of those things Al Gore was talking about.
I mean, why? Well, wow, Al Gore, when he just mentioned that, so that how come all these other people aren't talking about this? But I mean, this trumps all the other issues, because, see, we can talk about all these other things, and that's great, but if he calls martial law, all these other issues are moot.
Yeah, and what's...
Yeah, no saying nothing. I mean, that's it.
So, yeah, and so people can understand, that Capitol Hill Blue article references some executive orders, and I know some people are skeptical of Capitol Hill Blue, but the executive orders that are referenced already exist. They have already been signed into effect, and executive orders are terrifying things to begin with, because it's a matter of James Madison would run naked in the snow in Washington, D.C.
Really?
To know about executive orders.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the president can, by the stroke of a pen, make his own law
mm-hmm.
is absolutely horrifying to an idea of separation
absolutely.
Of powers.
Absolutely.
And it has already been done. I don't know if you saw the executive order that he signed about Iraq that said no one could sue an oil company.
No, I didn't see that. That's what, yeah, I mean, what surprises me anymore? Please tell me something that'll surprise me, because I can't be surprised.
I got nothing, Mitch. I got nothing.
I'm lost. I mean, this guy, I mean, you know, when I see George Bush, I think of that last scene in Braveheart, you know?
Yeah.
And I wish I was there and he was the other guy. He was Braveheart. And you get his last word. You can see him. Your last word, please. that would be it, you know. That would be his last word. You know, but, you know, the thing now, though, is that it's like, you know, unless we make the public very aware that this can happen, I mean, the public accepts it is real quick, and it says, and if something happens, the public at least is aware beforehand that this is something that's being perpetrated on them.
And you're so right. This has got to be stopped. It's got to be stopped cold in its tracks, because a conversation I was having with my dad earlier today, Mitch. We you know, he's 81. I'll soon be 43, and we're still talking, which is cool. But we were talking about impeachment, and you know, there's a great hope on our side of the aisle that we can retake the House and retake the Senate and start impeachment proceedings against George Bush. But
I'm worried he's not going to have an election. That's what I'm worried about. There's not going to be an election if he thinks he's going to lose the Congress.
Well, you know, it'd be hard to have a congressional election if, like, we had another, hijacked plane attack on the Capitol building, wouldn't it? We'd have to suspend those elections, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we already got the letter from Bin Laden today, right, telling us he's going to attack. Hey, perfect time, you know?
And what's more,
it's so odd. They're becoming so obvious.
There are so many things that are hard to, that pile up that it's hard to remember. It was two and a half, three years back when there was a memo floated through the White House about suspending elections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that remembers this? Do you remember Rumsfeld about a half a year ago talking about 9/11 and mentioning the third plane, the one that went out of Pennsylvania, talking about the plane, saying, oh, and the one we shot down?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, indeed. Well,
nobody's ever talked about that. I mean...
Well, for good reason. You know, you keep talking about, I mean, you mentioned how they can come, the guys in the dark car with the dark glasses and the dark suits and the hats, and, you know, you go away and nobody knows.
You know, like Amaroff, right? Amaroff when he was coming out of the building.
Oh, my God.
Boris Bedinoff.
But they can do that. I'm not telling tales out of school. I've got a very good friend. Used to be an air traffic controller. Watched that thing go down with the plane in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
On the scope.
Rumsfeld, I just flipped that he shot the plane down and
yeah.
didn't say anything. Nobody mentioned it.
Well, you know, that's because...
I mean, I think that's news.
What kind of?
You know, yeah. I think that should make the news. I mean, I think the backpack on his back during the debates, they should have torn him apart for that.
Well, sure, a NASA scientist, for God's sakes, analyzed the photographs of George Bush's back during the debate with technology and software they use to, like, look at Mars. And he said, yeah, this is a thing.
Undoubtedly, yeah. They even showed the thing that was on his back. They showed exactly what it was. Remember next to the picture?
Yeah.
You could see exactly. You could see the shape and everything. And it was, you know, I mean, the guy, you know what it is? And the funny part is the biggest distraction of all, the biggest distraction of all is we're getting there to Bush, and he's just an idiot. He ain't doing anything. It's Cheney and the rest of them. And, you know, but they put up him. I mean, that's the biggest joke of all, is they put him up front as the guy that catches all the flack, and he's an idiot.
Well, he's an idiot. He's an idiot, but he's a mean idiot. You know, I don't know if you've ever hung out in a bar or anything, but there's a big difference between the happy drunk and the mean drunk.
No, well, he's the mean drunk. But
he's the mean drunk muttering on the stool at the end of the bar.
Right, but he's also the guy when they're talking foreign policy, they say, George, will you please go out and play? We'll tell you. When the grown-ups are finished, we'll call you, okay?
Yeah.
Go out and play, you know, hit T-ball or something.
Yeah, stay off your bicycle.
Yeah, get down and do some exercise, George. When we need you, we'll call you, you know? I'm surprised they let him out in public anymore because I think the guy's drinking.
Oh.
I mean, he's always showing up with bruises on his face. He must be falling down a lot. He has a rug burn on his face.
Well, one of the hottest videos out on the Internet right now, I mentioned canofun.com a little bit ago.
That, yeah.
That is Bush drunk thing. You can't watch that and not know that this guy is on the sauce big time.
Did you see the one Letterman did where they exploded the
Yeah.
That was really funny, too. The best one I ever saw was the one they did. Did you see the one with Don Knotts last year?
No.
Oh, I'll email it to you. It's a whole movie with Don Knotts as George W. Bush.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, you won't believe it. It's the best video I've ever seen. And, I mean, I'm talking jab, all of it. This is the best. Without a doubt, you'll die. I'll get out to you before the night's over.
Okay, wonderful. Hey, Mitch, we've got to hit it, though. We've got a break coming up. Great talking to you. I hope we'll hear from you again.
All right, buddy. I hope the other people call in and we keep this topic going today, okay?
Absolutely. We'll do our best.
All right, man. It's good to be an outlaw, buddy.
All right.
Take care.
I'm right there with you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Remember, when outlaws are outlawed, only outlaws will have law. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, This is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing. You know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're welcome to join in the program. I love that song. The phone number is 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. Email's easy, too. bob@headonradio.com. Let's go straight back to the phones. Andy is calling from Wales, and I don't mean Wales, Alabama, either. Hey, Andy.
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
Doing good. You?
Yeah, not too bad. Bit of a cold, but I'll survive, man.
Well, yeah, get around it. Get over it.
Yeah. No worries. Keep sniffing herbal things, and hopefully I'll get better.
Exactly. Just stay the heck away from the Tamiflu, okay?
Oh, yeah, Donald Rumsfeld owns some of those shares, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, sort of thing. Well, what do? Laugh or cry, man?
No, I'm up for laugh. Because at least, well, you know, the Pentagon now says that it's good for you.
Yeah, no, it's official. Yeah. Don't worry if your son's dead. Just laugh.
Yeah, have a good giggle and move on.
Yeah, that's one of the more disturbing aspects.
We're paying for that. We paid thousands of dollars to get somebody to come up with that.
Oh, yeah, consultant fees, yeah.
Brother.
Sure, I can believe that. Hey, no worries. I mean, you know, our civil service are just as good at handing out huge amounts of money to people as yours is. So, yeah, we know that score. It's ridiculous, but what can you do?
carry on, raise a little ruckus.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't happen again next time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Who are we kidding?
Yeah, ourselves, basically. What do we do? Well, I don't know. What we can do is keep arguing with them, but this whole Osama bin Laden, I say, convenient audio tape that's popped up.
Yeah, and, you know, we got one yesterday, and nobody really bid on it too hard, so today we get Ayman al-Zawahiri.
Oh.
Yeah, tape number two.
Two in 2 days?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, are you scared yet?
I suppose I should be, really.
Oh, terrified. You should be shaking in your shoes, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so scared. I mean, I live in a society full of Muslims. Literally, I live in an area that every other faith is brown, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's fairly ethnically diverse, and none of them are dangerous, man. Do you know what I mean? They're as dangerous as any white guy you see wandering down the road. Some of them are a bit unstable. Most of them are fine. And this is what it's all about. We all know this. The American people mostly know this, except for a few nutters. This is just setting up their, okay, can't have elections, guys. That's all they're doing, you know?
It seems that way. Mm-hmm. Because now that we've caught on to the electronic voting machines, and that seems to be out in the open, the next step is just to cancel the elections, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, we can't trust the machines now, so we're going to cancel it all because we're in danger, so we can't afford to take time to fix it.
Yeah, we can't trust the machines, and we can't trust the American people. You guys don't get to vote anymore. You know, I don't know how y'all pull it off in the UK, Andy. All those paper ballots. I mean, I've seen photographs. It stuns
have
me.
A bunch of people who get on with it. That's how we pull it off. You know, you get the paper ballots in. You get a bunch of people watching them. You get a bunch of people sat down. You count them, tally it up, bingo. You know, it also gives all the news channels something to do where they can actually, like, you know, get results coming in. It's not. I did watch your elections the last time, you know, praying. I'm not religious at all, but I was praying. And, you know, the system you guys seem to have is kind of like, oh, has it happened yet? It's happened. Right, okay, we have this president. Right, it's all over. You know what I mean? And over here, it is kind of like they count them in as they're coming in. There's constantly like, it's going this way, it's going that way. Of course, we've got the advantage of three parties. So we get a bit more of a diverse result. You know, both the main party has to watch over both shoulders, not just one.
Well, you know, that's part of our instant gratification society.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just I don't know. The America has so much potential, and I've got to admit it. I have problems with the founding fathers, as I'm sure many Americans do, because you know they weren't exactly like the purest of people, were they?
No, not at all.
At least they came up with a fairly workable document, if it had been worked on. And I just feel that in the last sort of, well, Reagan basically, I guess it was, wasn't it? Since Reagan, it's really gone properly downhill. America, the American government has got more and more aggressive, and the American people seem to be more and more disengaged.
Well, and the other thing that started with Reagan, Andy, was this notion that government is a bad thing. You know,
yeah.
Reagan campaigned on this notion of getting government off your backs. Now, never mind the fact that the ranks of government employees swelled more under Reagan than they had under any previous president.
Yeah, right.
But they created this mindset that said the government of the people, by the people, and for the people is bad.
Yeah.
And that just strikes me as nuts.
It is. It's absolutely insane. I mean, you know... It's a bit, I guess you guys haven't had that much experience of history with the whole government thing because you're a young nation. But, I mean, just look at, like, you know, English governmental history. I mean, you know, we go back to the Magna Carta and then we go back before that to Anglo-Saxon law. And, I mean, the Anglo-Saxons, who were, like, pretty vicious killers, guaranteed the freedoms of all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they elected their leaders. This is, like, post-Roman. And now we're back to a point where a bunch of, like, rich people push a leader onto the people.
Well, it goes back to the etymology of the word lord. Andy,
yeah.
I think that's an elision. A lord was originally a designated representative of the leader who literally guarded the bread. He was the loaf warden.
Yeah, yeah.
And as such, you know, the guy who guards the food guards the kingdom.
Mm.
And that, you know, up through Hastings and then the Magna Carta, you know, I'm convinced that people like the Bush family, if they even have the intelligence to think about something like the Magna Carta, they think about it and they grieve over it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, because you know, before the Magna Carta, you know, those were the good old days.
Oh yeah, I mean they're thinking back to Roman times where there were no human rights and everybody could just be slaves if you had the power to take them. That's what they like, isn't it?
Sure it is.
Give and the that's, power over people, they enjoy that.
That's where they'd like to take the United States.
Mm, and the problem with that is it takes the rest of the world with it, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, we can't. You know, we're only 5% of the population. We use 25% of the resources,
mm-hmm.
and if America gets a cold, the rest of the world gets the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean I hate to say it, but there are some positive possibilities, even if it all goes wrong for America. And one of the most positive ones is China. I mean, China. You know, it's like China is actually the world's leading peace nation. Do you know that? They're trying to stop your government putting nuclear weapons in space.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty pass when we rely on China to save the world and human rights alongside it. I mean, China.
I know, and trying to get in the way of us storming the gates of Tehran as well. You know,
yeah,
and
right.
Yeah, we're driving Iran into the arms of Russia and China.
Oh, you already have. It's already there.
Yeah, sure.
Russia and China are never going to back any Security Council, because Russia and China now have the opportunity to do what the U.S. has been doing for years, which is use the veto and tell everyone not to talk about it.
Right.
Because Russia and China won't even tell everyone not to talk about it. They'll just laugh loudly and around the world going, "How? What's America going to do about it?" And right now, well, what is America going to do about it? I mean, the scary thing is I think George Bush knows what he'd like to do about it, and it's a big red button.
Yeah, we could. Well, I mean, we haven't been able to whip Iraq.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what does it say about us? I mean, that's not about the quality of our fighting personnel or our military.
Okay. I mean, look, you can have the greatest warriors in the world, and if you don't use them properly, then you lose. I mean, you know, the U.S. has for years kind of been blinded by its superiority in equipment and superiority in training, and that's good. It's just that if the guys that are at the top end that are telling them what to do have got their heads shoved, well, you know, somewhere the sun doesn't shine.
Exactly. Well, it goes back to the American Civil War. I mean, on the South, the South had the great generals, and the North had the manpower and the materiel.
Yeah.
I forget which battle it was, but there was one where, for simple purposes, Ulysses S. Grant just counted bullets and realized he had more bullets than the South had men.
Mm.
You know, that's not great military leadership.
No, it's simple. It's logistical leadership, and that doesn't win you wars. I mean, I've read The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and because, I mean, I play war games on my computer, you know, and it's good for life anyway. It sort of teaches you how to attack situations and stuff. But,
right.
It's not a complicated document.
No, well, people read Sun Tzu, and they get into the they get into the meat of it, but they forget the first lesson of the art of war, Andy. And rule one in Sun Tzu is avoid war at all costs.
Yeah, war is bad. Yeah, I know. People kind of, I think they open it on the second page maybe and just sort of skip that bit. I'm not really sure. Or maybe they just don't want to be aware. I mean, you know, there's just so many, the whole Iraq war is ridiculous. I mean, how do you invade a country and say you're going to secure it with that few troops using the tactics that are, well, as far as I can tell, basically Donald Rumsfeld's got your guys driving up and down roads in unarmoured vehicles using up explosives?
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird kind of calculus where, you know, every time we get a soldier blown up, that means that maybe that's the two less shells out of Saddam's arsenal that bother to secure in the first place.
But the problem is they're right. It is two less shells. Their calculation is correct. But the problem is they haven't told you the real calculation, which is how much stuff there is kicking around in there.
Well, that's precisely the point. Before the presidential election, we stirred up a little bit of stink about the fact that we shot right past all the ammo depots because we had to pull down Saddam's statue in Baghdad.
Well, I mean, how long would it have taken just to, like, throw some explosives in there and blow them up once everyone was a safe distance, just getting past them? I mean, I haven't fought in a war, but
no, I understand what you're saying, but you got to understand what their side of it was. Oh, yeah. They knew starting this war that they had to find some weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
So they peek into the dump, they peek into the bunker, and they go, let's see, we got RPGs, we got howitzer shells. I don't see any weapons of mass destruction. Move on. We got to find another one. Maybe they're there.
Yeah.
And the next thing, the bad guys have that.
Well, yeah, they just wandered in, took it all, didn't they? Like it was guarded. It's ridiculous.
It was pathetic.
Where do you start? I mean, this administration is basically so ridiculous to be honest with you, when you just look at George Bush and how they do things, it doesn't surprise me at all that they're just screwing things up in Iraq this way.
They're screw-ups from the get-go.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of old, unreconstructed Nixonians in the form of Cheney and Rumsfeld.
I call them what they are. They're Straussians, aren't they? They're not Nixonians.
Well, okay, sure, absolutely. And then at the head of it all, like Mitch was talking about, you got George Bush, and he's the mean old drunk at the end of the bar.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I would like to say that I don't think he's just drinking. There's a thing going on with his jaw that you see in
the cocaine grind.
Yeah. I know a lot of I'm not saying a lot of my mates do it, but a few of them do, and when they do a lot, they look like that.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean.
Yeah.
He's been diagnosed as a dry drunk.
Yeah,
he's been diagnosed as, sociopathic, psychopathic. Yeah. There's no surprise in it at all for me, Andy. And you tie it together with things like I mentioned to Mitch, the canoffun.com video, Is Bush Drunk? I don't know if you've seen that yet or not.
No, I haven't. I'm going to go and check that.
Go look at it. I mean, you can't come to any other conclusion that this guy is screwed up out of his mind.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we're talking about babbling, blithering, idiot-level stuff, you know. How could you have, unless... Well, let's see. You got a choice. This guy is either the most insensate, insensitive, idiotic, heartless, brainless fool that's ever drawn breath on planet Earth. And, I mean, that's the head of a pretty big list.
Well, it is, yeah.
Or he's into something. He's really rotten his brain bad, because otherwise, how do you walk in to people who have lost limbs and tell them that you just got out of combat with a hickory branch?
I know. I mean, basically, you got to look at this family, haven't you? They're rich from the days of financing the Nazis, so they've never really been real Americans. They've never been real humans, have they?
No.
They don't experience empathy. I mean, what was it Barbara Bush said? Well, we've all heard it, but it was pretty insane, wasn't it?
Which time? I mean,
the more recent one.
Yeah, there was the My Beautiful Mind part, and then the look at all these little black people moved into the Astrodome. Things are working out pretty nice for them. Yeah, there's that one.
Yeah.
Hateful. Just
yeah, insane, utterly insane. I mean, and the worst thing is that she's so... I mean, we have aristocrats over here that come in two types. You have the old type, which are like her, and you have the newer type of aristocrats who just happen to sound like them but are quite cool, yeah? And she is definitely of the old school of the Victorianism just...
But Andy, it flows downhill. It flows downhill. I don't know if you've seen the photographs of Barbie Bush, the daughter... traveling with her mother in Africa. We talked about that a little bit last night.
Right.
Great God in heaven. There, she shows up in a skin-tight dress with snakeskin pumps in Africa? No, kidding.
Oh, man. I mean, don't they have PR people?
What they need, Andy, is handlers.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you, me, Mike Malloy, any of these people, if they could convert one of us to their side, then there wouldn't be these arguments going on from the left, because nobody would know what was going on.
Right.
Because we're kind of smart enough to control things, should we want to. That's the point, we don't want to. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
I just don't understand how it is they can't find any... I mean, that Frank Luntz guy is clever with words. You need someone like that who's clever with images. I don't understand why they haven't got one of them. But I'm kind of glad they haven't. I mean, how did you not get lynched?
I don't know, but it wasn't just the skin tight dress and the snakeskin pumps. There was another picture of young Barbie with a white top on, and this isn't the fashion review or anything, but a white top on unbuttoned to her navel. You know, in a culture that kills women for exposing their navels.
Yeah. I mean, what do? I mean. There's this thing. It's called respect. They might not have heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have gotten past that whole idea of referring to the dark-skinned people as the wogs.
Yeah, we got over that.
We haven't.
Pretty much. I mean, there's still a few...
We haven't.
...there, but...
We're a mess. Andy, so good to hear from you. Have yourself a great Saturday.
I will do. I'll speak to you next week, man. Take
All
care.
Right, great. I look forward to it. Take care.
See you later.
Bye now. That's our pal Andy in Wales with UK perspective on things. Our correspondent. That's right, Agnes. Let's take a break and come back. Another phone call. This is Head On. You know me. I'm Bob.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines. But there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hiya, Bobby.
Hi, Jim.
You want to go for a ride?
Sure, Jim.
Jump in.
I'm a Bobby girl in the Bobby world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic.
You're a smart aleck, Agnes Kincaid. Barbie girl. Shame on you. Besides, Barbie Bush isn't a blonde. She's a brunette. For God's sakes. 10 minutes before the hour, David has been waiting forever and a day. Thanks, David. We appreciate it.
Oh, Bob, it's been absolutely marvelous. I mean, good grief. A call from California with an informed individual that somehow I don't think grew up in California, but never mind that part. And then a call from Wales. Bob, have you ever realized how remarkable it is that the rest of the world understands us and we put no effort into understanding them? That man demonstrated more understanding of American politics than almost any wingnut that's ever called your show.
No, oh, without a doubt, and that's the thing. When you pay attention, no, not pay attention, but when you happen to, by some fault or mistake, listen to wingnut, what passes for thought, and there's quotes around that word thought. You understand that they think the world is the United States, or the United States is the world. There's nobody but them.
It's that old canard about if you shout English loudly enough, they'll understand it. Well, I know we're not supposed to call anybody's name, so I won't do that to any of your right-wing nut callers of the past time, because we don't want to do that. So now, on to something completely different.
Right.
Have you heard from Gary or Jeff lately?
Oh, God, I got set up.
Well, you know, I'm hardwired to do that. Now then, I want to make sure.
Now, that's not our friend Jeff in Pennsylvania.
No.
Okay, because we heard.
Oh, no, no. Now, I want to make sure my friend Wayne knows that I care about him. Earlier, there was a phrase, and I'm sure it was just a slip of the tongue on your part. You said, I want to call out my friend Wayne to grant honorary, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
The phrase call out without the preposition to usually means the guy on the other end's remiss.
No.
I think if I were you, anytime you say call out with regard to a man as strong and as vigorous as Wayne, put the two in there, Bob.
No, yeah, point taken.
Now then, I'm really going to get after you, because night before last...
Well, what have I done now?
Well, it's a good point.
Oh, okay.
It's a good point. You were more gracious than you should have been, because you said the Bush administration was lazy. Let's be Southern about it. They were trifling about not going to, what is it, FISA, whatever that
guy,
to grant the licenses to spy and to listen and to wiretap. You said they were lazy. No, Bob, you're being too nice about it. They don't want anyone to know who it is they're tapping into. They would not care about winning 1,900 out of 1,900. They don't want to apply for those FISA items because they don't want America, they don't want us to know that they want to spy on John Kerry's administrative assistant. They don't want anybody to know that they want to spy on Barack Obama's gardener. They don't want anybody to know. They don't want a permanent record of who it is they want to tap. Therefore, they go around it. It wouldn't matter if they could get, you know, it's not that they think they should, that they would be encumbered. Nobody would care about that.
It's some kind of institutional omerta, isn't it, David?
Exactly. They don't want America to know that they're using that as an excuse to pry into every librarian that might give a book on how bombs work to a kid in Butte, Montana. They don't want America to know that this spying is based on the biggest catch-all net, the Internet, and anyone that studies statistics has ever seen. They don't want to step up to the counter and say, I would, even though he kisses my butt, I'd like to spy on Biden's secretary. They don't want to apply for those, Bob. That's why they don't want to do it.
There's probably a hell of a lot of truth in that, David. And, you know, even though this is secret stuff and it's supposed to never leave the FISA court, I suppose that some, you know, they hate whistleblowers more than they hate Osama. The Bush administration does. And as long as there's some sort of paper trail, it's always possible they could be caught. So it makes sense what you're saying.
There's got to be someone in that chain of events, someone a ring or two out from the FISA judge, that could look at a list of Democratic operatives, one right after the other, 20, 30, 40, 50 of them, and somebody, two rings out from that judge, would go, wait a second, this has got nothing to do with the way FISA was passed in 1978. I've got to drop a dime on these guys. They don't want any written record because they know that some caring American patriot with a capital P, real one, would out them for the horrible, backbiting cheaters that they are.
And when you take that in conjunction with the fact of what I mentioned earlier, these unreconstructed, unrepentant Nixonians, you know, there is an element of the Republican Party, David, that is still pissed off about the fact that Nixon got caught doing things like the business with Daniel Ellsberg's psychologist, whatever, and the dirty tricks and the sneaking and the spying and the creeping around in the dark and still of the night. There's still a significant cadre of the Republican Party that hates the fact that they're not still doing it. And as a consequence of that, you're absolutely right. If
he is some sort of vampire out of a grave to resurrect the reputation of Nixon. I mean, my Lord, Cheney should have died 100 times before now. You've never seen him in sunlight. That's why he had the parka on in the dead of winter in Russia with a wolf hair over his face. Some kind of evil thing that won't die to resurrect the reputation of Nixon. Please, I've never said it before, but I think it's true.
I think you're absolutely right. Oh, and I think you're going to get a visit from Agent Fred.
Well, if
you're not speaking about actually dying. I mean, he's undead. He can't die, right?
Well, hey, Agent Fred, think about this one. Brown Bear.
Apple Brown Betty.
Special Fudge. Title charts. Francisco. Okay, Agent Fred, am I on the A-list? Do I want to sponsor?
You ain't getting on no aircraft, large nor small, Brother David.
I may not even be able to take commercial flights.
Hell, I'd watch out for small watercraft if I were you.
There's lights in my driveway, Bob. I need to go to the door. There's some men in front of suits coming up the walk now.
Don't open your mailbox, okay?
Oh, I shan't. I promise.
David, so good to hear from you. Have yourself a great weekend. I'm sure you'll be camped out by the television rooting, hollering, go Steelers.
I will indeed, because I only want the Pittsburgh Steelers, as owned and operated by that wonderful Rooney family. I only want that team to lose once in any given year to the team sponsored by the Acme Packers of Green Bay, Wisconsin, in 1921, the first time, the Green Bay Packers football since 1921.
Thanks so much, David. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
All right. Okay, top of the hour break is on its way when we come back. Maybe we'll do some sound from the hearings today. Or your phone calls. I like the phone calls better myself. And the phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4. Head on. 877-443-2366. Agent Fred, Special Fudge. Hello! I'm Bob.
Here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Last week's 4th Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for 4th Estate Radio. Get the details at 4thestateradio.com. That's 4thestateradio.com.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have all of this injustice in society, and why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Yeah.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Back 6 minutes after the hour. Nice little break there. Put some fresh paper in the printer. Got some ice for the orange pop. Gotta have a big orange, because this can be dry work, thirsty work. But I kid. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the second hour of our final program for the week. One wonders what sort of slippery, sleazy things the Republicans have planned to send down the memory hole with the end of this news cycle. One doesn't know. Although I got an email from our friend Linda in Boston with regard to an article at Salon. You know how it works at Salon. If you're not a premium member, you can go and in this case, watch a really cool ad for Porsche. There's a new Porsche out. Yes, I have a German automobile fixation. But anyway, you can watch the ad for... I know, I should be like into Corvettes or something, but... the German cars are union-made, too. But anyway, don't give me with the dirty looks, Agnes. I mean, no, this article, Fear of Spying. I read it during the break. Go read it yourselves. Now, I went on the air this evening all fired up and ready to talk about the little unofficial hearings that John Conyers and Bob Wexler and a few others, Gerald Nadler, held today in the basement of the Capitol, because they couldn't have a real hearing room because, in fact, the House of Representatives is run like a plantation by the Republican Party. And Linda sends me this article, Fear of Spying. Democratic strategist, go read the article. The header is enough. Democratic strategists say opposing Bush on NSA spying makes the party look... Just sit down. Makes the party look weak. And then they add, of course, that's what they said about Iraq, too. It opens, what does Dick Cheney have in common with Democratic campaign consultants? This is not a trick question built around hairline health or hard-nosed philosophy of government. Instead, what unite the vice president and the opposition party operatives are their fears of the fallout from the National Security Agency eavesdropping scandal. Cheney, of course, is not talking, so his views have to be inferred at a distance, but the Democratic consultants are outspoken about their political concerns over the warrantless wiretapping furor, as long as their identities are protected by don't use my name in print anonymity. Anybody want to care, or anybody want to care to hazard a guess where this kind of political thinking, this political strategy is coming from? Anybody? Really? Want to try DLC? Not DNC, DLC. You know, Al Fromm and that crowd that think that only by being more like Republicans can we be more like Democrats. Wow, that makes my head hurt. You know, these, you know, I was taken a bit to task last night for suggesting that us liberals, us progressives, us people who really give a damn about the Constitution and give a damn about the country, that we ought to gird ourselves up and get tough amongst ourselves and understand the other side for what they are and be ready to damn well fight. And I took some grief for that. And here it is. I mean, here's your moderate centrists, folks. The President of the United States is spying on American citizens and American institutions. And there are elements within our party, Joe Lieberman, who think that it's just dandy. There is an element inside the Democratic Party that says, you know, if we just sit quietly and don't make any noise,
than the Republican Party, because they are a culture of corruption, the Republican Party will self-destruct. They're self-destructing already. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to have any ideas. We don't have to have any policies. They'll just self-destruct, and then, bang, we'll have power in November 2006. So everybody just sit quietly, okay? Here, let's sing Kumbaya.
Really? No kidding. Now, let's do go to the sound bites. I want you to hear... This is an exchange between Congressman Wexler and Richard Hirsch. Richard Hirsch was a member of the group that was meeting at the Quaker Meeting House. And they're part of a group that opposes on-campus recruiting. You know, they're part of a group that sort of objects to snatching young Americans away from their education before they're fully educated to go and fight in an illegal, dirty, immoral, rotten, filthy, stinking war that we had no business fighting in the first place. Yeah. Quakers. Go. Yeah. Now, it's a long cut. It's a couple of minutes. Please, you know, don't get upset. Yeah, look, we're liberals, we're progressives, we're Democrats, we're smart. We have the attention span to handle a two-minute soundbite, right? Okay, go.
The president has exercised his discretion. The Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Rumsfeld, has exercised his discretion. The commanders at the NSA have exercised their discretion. The enlisted people who were ordered, I presume, to go and sit in the Quaker church in Palm Beach County, they follow their orders. Could you describe for us, and you have to some degree, but I think it's important for Americans to understand in the context of that question, it can't happen to me. Who was sitting in that Quaker church in Palm Beach County? Were these people that had traveled to Afghanistan in the 1990s? Were these people who had taken plane trips to Pakistan? People who had ongoing dealings with Iraqi agents? My understanding is there's a bunch of grandmothers were there. Could you describe for us so America understands the answer of the question, could it happen to me? Who was in that church when the Department of Defense ordered enlisted people to go spy on Americans?
Yes, I can. There was me, disabled, 59, father of two daughters. There was Evelyn Gratchow, 79 years old, a grandmother and an activist, a former union member.
Well.
There was Deborah Smith, an Asian American, housewife. There was Javier Del Sol, a Native American and a student. There was Marie Zwicker, the mother of Native American children, and a nurse. There was Alan Taylor, a pharmacist, a retired pharmacist, and retired attorney. There was James Venable, an African American, a web designer, a marketing person, a businessman. There was his wife, Bonnie Redding.
Still haven't heard Ayman al-Zawahiri.
A European American like myself, who is a legal attorney, a real estate agent, and a direct marketing person. I hope I haven't left anyone out. And if I have, I hope they can forgive me. There were a number of other Quakers there as well. I can't name them all. But I do know that none of us had traveled outside the country. None of us had, to my knowledge, made any phone calls outside the country. We were just people interested in getting at some truth.
Like I said, I know that was a long soundbite to go through, but I think you probably got the idea. Do you get it? The Bush administration sent enlisted, not officers, no, not officers, enlisted personnel of the United States military to sneak in and spy on Quakers because they had the audacity to think that perhaps they had a moral obligation to inform students what the recruiters who wanted their warm bodies in a uniform were really all about. The Bush administration deems people who favor nonviolence. Nonviolence. Now, this is the 20th day of January. Martin Luther King Day was Monday, sunshine. And the Bush administration, you know, they hauled out George to talk about, well, you know, his work is not yet complete. Guess what? The Bush administration would leap collectively off a cliff if they thought it would stop the work of Martin Luther King from ever being completed, because the work of Martin Luther King wasn't all about bus rides. It was about ending the stupidity and the futility and the hate and the idiocy of war and slaughter and death and maiming. And so, because there's a group out there that advocates not killing people just because they happen to not be Americans, who advocates killing people who just because they happen to, have some oil, those people are deemed by the Bush administration as enemies of the state. They are deemed subversive. You and I have cause for alarm. We have cause to fear this administration. If they'll... Peaceniks! They'll... And it's not, you know, it's not just Palm Beach County, Florida, and these people. No, it happened all... It's happening all over the United States. They're spying on peaceniks. Because we don't think that, our conversation with Andy earlier. You know how it is. The idea that, not wanting slaughter is somehow dangerous to the state. And still... You know, the polling data, 52% of the American people, according to Zogby, support impeachment of the president. No more than 30% of the people of the United States ever supported the impeachment of Bill Clinton. The Republican Congress did it anyway. Because, baby, it is a plantation to them. And we are people to be herded and whipped. Black, white, pink, brown, tan. If you do not wholeheartedly march to the drumbeat of war and slaughter and death, you are an enemy of the state. It's that simple. Let's take a break. We do need to do that. And when we come back, a little bit more from Congressman Wexler, maybe a little something from Bruce Fine, maybe even something from Professor Jonathan Turley. Yeah. The evidence is all there. All we need to do is do something about it. Or at least try. What was that? I'd rather... never mind. We're already subversives anyway. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
remember that, just in case we ever face to face and make contact. The title held by me, M.I.B., means what you think you saw, you did not see. So don't break B, what was dead is now.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you, and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Tell you what, let's go straight to the phones. Bob's with us. Hey, Bob, you're head on. How you doing tonight?
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Yourself?
I just want to give you kudos, kudos, kudos to you and your young lady. You got it straight, and it's time, son. It really is. You know, them guys, they've been slamming. Oh, wait a minute. I keep saying that slamming thing. I must stop that. I want to say something.
Okay.
You said something tonight that made me so very proud, and your father must be proud of you for saying it. You said, Americans of African descent. And I hope you got that from me last night. Just saying African Americans.
I try to pay attention, Bob.
They're Americans. I know you pay attention. Good God. You got 2 left shoes. I've seen this, this right up you got. You were born with 2 left shoes. Okay?
Yeah.
And you got a left-handed and all that left-sided stuff, but it ain't left. And it ain't right. Okay?
Yep.
What it is American. And you said the truth. You said an American of African distraction, they were ripped out of their country and torn over here.
Yeah.
Okay? We came over here, and guess what Pocahontas heard from her father when her father saw the first white man step off a ship?
What's that?
There goes the neighborhood. There goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, there's a great T-shirt out there that shows, I think, Geronimo and Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and Red Cloud, and it says the original Founding Fathers.
Ah, yes, they are. You know, hey, if you stop and think, okay, just stop and think. We were not... Oh, we were not the original, okay? There's nothing original about us. There's nothing original about pink people, white people, black people. You know, the original human being, we have no idea what or where he was constructed or who built him, okay? We have no idea what God is. We constructed God out of our own thoughts. All men do that to make themselves happy about themselves.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, sure.
As long as Jesus is blonde-haired and blue-eyed and come from a Nordic descent, good Lord, I'm happy with him. But don't put no kinky little hair on his head.
Don't make him look like one of those scary people that we send to Guantanamo, huh?
Yeah, one of them nappy-headed people. Oh, no, not scary ones. Oh, them scary ones, no.
Well, I'm not talking about to me. I'm talking, yeah.
I have a 12-year-old son. He's going on 13. One of these days he will want to speak with you. Like he wants to speak with Mike, but Mike says, hey, 13.
Yeah, 13's the cutoff.
Yep. Anyway, I would wish upon this world that you stop thinking about oneself. I mean, hey, our glorious leader up there, John Conyers is his name right now. He really is, because he has called more people to speak before him, and he asked them very intelligent questions. Not like, what do you call him? Mike calls him, I think he calls him, oh gosh. Well, I'm not going to say it. Mike does it, and he does it well, and I'd probably mess it up. But, you know, you got callers all over the world, Bob. They call from Wales?
Yep.
Yeah. I liked that boy tonight. I loved him. I thought, yeah.
I don't know what Andy does for a living, but it's he's sharp enough to be better than just about 99% of the White House press corps over here. That's for sure.
He ain't no Scotty McClellan. Whoa! I have so many volumes of Scotty McClellan the Duck.
Yeah. See, I can't handle even. Trying to listen to Scott at any length whatsoever, because I don't, you know, my doctor hasn't given me anti-emetics that are quite strong enough to keep me from just, you know, the gag reflex from just taking over listening to him.
Oh, you're gonna break my heart with that one. I'm just chuckling so much, because, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, our people are multifaceted, multinational, multicultural, and multiracial.
Sure.
You know, they say there's a...
We're the good guys. We're the good guys, Bob. There's no doubt about it.
You gotta stop. They say multiracial, but when you get back in the...
Nah, it's just one. Yeah, just...
There's not a dot or a tistle between us, and you can't take out the, you know, how can you, you know, kind of take that little piece out of that other human being and, you know, and not take that big log out of your eye, because you're not looking at that human being as a human being. You're looking at the color of his skin. You're looking at the, you're not looking at the strength of his character as our greatest orator said, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that little ebony boys and little pink girls could walk down the street hand in hand. And maybe, in his name, you know?
Yeah.
Make the most beautiful children in the world. And they're always a kind of a cross between the two.
Sure. You
know, I think it's Randy Rhoads said this. He said, if God did not want the races to interbreed and make, you know, children, why in the heck are they so beautiful?
Yeah, and why are we so good at it? Hey, Bob, we've got to hit it, brother.
Okay.
Have yourself a great night, all right?
Love you, son. I love you for all you got. And you remember what I said. There ain't a bit of difference between the two of us or all those people up there in Northern Africa.
That's right. You take care. Bye now.
Good night, and have a good weekend, and take Agnes home a decent hour, and don't let me call you again.
All right. Take care. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's our buddy Bob in North Dakota. All right, it's time for our Cup of Joe report. Let's see what Joe Vecchio's got for us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll
the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. So in the wake of a new tape by Osama bin Laden, the Republicans and their paid cronies in the news media like Chris Matthews have taken to attacking Democrats for the failure to capture him. Excuse me, but who the hell's been in charge of the country for the past 5 years? Last time I checked, we had a Republican president, a Congress controlled by Republicans, a judiciary made up more and more of Republican-appointed judges, and a news media that only the marginally insane and the perpetually brainwashed can call liberal. And to the Liebermans and the Bidens and all the other Democrats who are apologists for these criminals, don't think your pretense at bipartisanship will be rewarded. You're next on the list. Now, some are calling for an apology from Chris Matthews, a man implicitly involved in Republican corruption, for calling Michael Moore and others terrorists. I say, forget the apology. What we ought to demand is his resignation and the resignation of practically the entire broadcast media who are disgraces to their profession. We ought to impeach this president and every member of his cabinet, place them under arrest, and hand them over to an international court on charges of war crimes where they can sit with Saddam and Osama and all the other scum we've backed over the years in the name of some ridiculous vision of an American empire. The greatest threat to any nation doesn't come from the outside. It comes from within. The enemy is among us. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts. 100 flights aboard company jets. 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels. $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss America.
Welcome back. Let's see, about 25 and a half minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And let's go back to our sound bites from the hearing today. Now, you heard the exchange between Congressman Wexler and Richard Hirsch, pointing out the fact that nobody that the George Bush sent folks to spy on had any overseas contacts. No one had any international phone calls. Then what the hell was the need to spy on them? Of course, we know what the answer to that is. And Congressman Wexler from Florida goes on and makes the point abundantly clear.
The president is doing is entirely legal. Then why wouldn't he have just gone through the accepted legal process to begin with? If he had gone through that process, we are told that on 13,000 occasions, he could have legally possibly done what he did in that Quaker church. But apparently, the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense have chosen a different path with no court approval to spy on people like you and the 79-year-old grandmother and these other patriotic Americans. And there shouldn't be a single American that today remains confident that it couldn't happen to them.
Because it did, and it has. You got to understand, with the supercomputers that the National Security Agency, Administration, Association, whatever the hell they are, with that bunch, the supercomputers intercept all the phone calls. Every last one. They're all intercepted. You call this program, it gets intercepted. You call your grandmother, it gets intercepted. And then based on, because they think that, I mean, these morons, idiots, think that Al-Qaeda, if Al-Qaeda even exists, they think that they're going to get on the phone and start giving, you know, driving directions. Oh, yes, I just downloaded MapQuest. You know, it doesn't happen that way. But of course, we've talked about that. So you've got to back up, and you've got to wonder. Well, you know, we're smart people. You're smart people. You know why the Defense Department sent enlisted men to spy on the Quakers. You know. If not, shucks. It's a talk show, I'll tell you. Ask yourself. This is the premise that you must examine. Would George Bush send spies, his Defense Department spies? Would George Bush send his Defense Department spies into a right-wing militia meeting and try to infiltrate them? Would he? Would George Bush send his Defense Department spies to infiltrate a Klan rally? Would George Bush send his Defense Department spies to one of those More War Now rallies that Glenn Beck ginned up all over the country to goad the people into starting a war with Iraq? Hell no! More war, more death, rah, rah, USA, USA, all the way, USA, kill Iraq. Yeah, you remember that, don't you? We've talked about Glenn Beck for the last couple of nights, the filthy little blossom. Talking about all the people he wants to kill. He was the one who, on behalf of Clear Channel, ginned up a whole bunch of those pro-war rallies, and they went around burning Dixie Chicks albums and all of that crap. So we come back to the original question. Why the Quakers? Well, this is the answer. And it's really simple when you get down to it. The Quakers are pacifists. Real, live, genuine, kumbaya singing peaceniks. And George Bush and the people who follow George Bush, we already know that they're cowards. They were cowards when their country needed them in Vietnam, and they're cowards now. And they felt comfortable spying on the Quakers because they knew the Quakers wouldn't hurt them. Bush and the people who follow him are just plain yella. Cowards. Big ol' sissy men. Never mind Arnold and his "don't be economic girly men." No, these are sissy men in the Bush administration. They won't attack anything that's bigger than them or stronger than them or that they think can even fight back. They have said, and probably truthfully, that invading Iraq... They never dreamed there would be an insurgency if they invaded Iraq. My God, can you imagine what would happen if the Klan caught government spies in one of its little get-togethers? There wouldn't be enough left of them to identify with dental records. You know, not that the Bush administration or any Republican would need to infiltrate a Klan rally. Hell, they're all honorary grand wizards to begin with. But these little Nancy boys in the Bush administration, they think that pacifist means scared. It doesn't. But they thought they could scare the Quakers into backing off their activities. You know, something tells me that, you know, as usual, these doofuses in the White House are mistaken. I take it from today's proceedings in Washington, in the basement of the Capitol, where they, where the plantations overseers sent the Democrats, that the Quakers don't scare. They don't fight. The Quakers don't. But you got to understand where the Quakers are coming from. It's a little like my mom used to tell me when I was a little boy and would get into scuffles on the schoolyard playground. It takes a hell of a lot more brains and guts to stay out of a fight than to get into one. The Quakers don't fight, but they don't scare. And at the bottom of it all, you must understand that the Bush administration and all of the heavy hitters within it are terrified. They're chickens, they're gutless cowards, they're wussies. Honest to God, they are. That's why they respond to bully treatment. If you stand up to them, they run away. And they cry a lot. That's all there is to them. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on, man.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good, you?
Good. First thing I have to say after that last statement is I ain't no Quaker, buddy.
Nope.
Nope.
Not me either.
And I, you know, I have great regard for them and all that. But it's time to fight.
Yeah.
And I welcome Brother John, what should I call him? Konyurich.
Yeah, Konyurcevich.
Yeah, you know, that's, I don't know, that's pretty close to Kucinich, but, you know, I don't know, what's Kucinich, I wonder?
Yeah, he's a Pole.
Yeah, how'd he get the ICH? Where'd that come from?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he is a Serb.
I don't know. Maybe he's a Croatian.
Yeah, possibly.
Whatever, he's a good man. And that's what, you know, that's what we need is good men.
Yeah.
And John Konyurich, well, you know, what can you say about this guy? I mean, he is definitely emboldened.
No, he's got him that he has to haul around in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, he does. And hopefully, you know, he can influence some of these senators that we have and stuff. You know, I'm upset. Well, I mean, guys, these are the people we need, guys like that that are willing to go into the basement. I listened to different things from these hearings. Who was the representative that laid it out about the president broke the law? Now, you could debate whether it was right or wrong.
Yeah, I got that right here. That's Jonathan Turley.
And this guy ain't no liberal.
No. This guy, like I said, this guy was screaming at the top of his lungs for Bill Clinton's head on a platter.
Okay. Well, he laid it out pretty good.
Yeah.
He laid it out real well. And, you know, hopefully they can embolden some of these damn senators, because if these people don't get together and filibuster Alito, I know they're thinking, well, if we just be quiet and hide down here in the basement.
Yeah, Carl won't kick us again.
Right, exactly. And we'll sneak up on him and we'll win all the elections in 2006. Baloney. It's time to stand up. And the time is now. John Kant, take his example. You know,
yeah.
There's some. Well, he's been emboldened for a long time, and it's what we have to do. Think about what these people are doing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing when they put the Attorney General, you know, of the United States on the radio defending, or and on television defending a criminal. George Bush broke the law.
He is a crook.
He is a crook. And, you know, like the man said, you can argue about his justifications one way or the other, but you cannot argue that he didn't break the law. And that's what he did.
Yeah. It's so. it's pretty, I mean, it is what it is. And he said he was going to do it again.
He said, I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, there's, well, more and more every day. It wasn't all of what just what they said they did. And how can anybody feel safe? How can anybody feel? And now they want to go after your Google records?
Right.
Right. Oh, okay.
Well, you know what? I think this is payback for Google. Because, I mean, you know, for eons now, if you in the browser window there, if you type in miserable failure,
and Bush comes up,
yeah,
with
and
Google.
It hit, yeah, you hit I'm feeling lucky. It takes you straight to whitehouse.gov and George Bush's biography. I think this is payback.
Well, yeah, maybe it is. You know, I mean, the truth, you know, I guess won't set you free sometimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the Quakers were they have called them subversives. They have called the Quakers subversives. So everybody who's ever typed in, and all the Quakers, I mean, the Quakers are pacifists, for God's sakes. It's almost impossible for them to be subversive. And so, therefore, if the Quakers are subversives, then every single American who has ever typed miserable failure into Google and clicked I'm feeling lucky is every bit as more or is every bit as subversive or more so than any Quaker could ever want to be.
At least. Listen, I just wanted to, you know, John Conyers is, you know, a Serbian in my estimation.
Works for me.
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to make him a, you know, I don't know. I'll have to find out the...
Conyersevich.
The Conyersevich. Well, you get it, the Vich. Okay, yeah, all right. I don't know. As long as you got an ICH.
Right, that was my understanding.
Yeah.
Conyerich.
So, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll have to make a big pot of sodoma, you know.
Yeah.
The cake eaters, that stuffed cabbage. But the Serbians, that's what sodoma is.
I tell you what, I'd take a big pot of stuffed cabbage any day of the week.
Oh, listen, David, my brother, 27-17, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Whoa. You are feeling emboldened tonight, aren't you?
Oh, I am emboldened. So are the Steelers.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch out for that Serbian guy.
that Serbian
hair.
Yeah, that Serbian Polynesian guy.
Yeah, that Serbian Polynesian guy. Yeah, he's dangerous, man.
Yeah, because I don't think we're going to have the same screwed up referee this week.
God, I hope not.
I'm thinking that guy's done for the playoffs now.
You know, the Steelers beat the big money. The referees and the Indianapolis Colts. That was quite an accomplishment.
Well, that ought to be enough just to get you to the Super Bowl there.
Yes, it should. And they're on their way. You know, Denver, Plummer's going down, man.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
All right, brother.
All right, take it easy, Wayne.
Okay, have a good weekend.
Later, you Bye. Too. Oh, that's a man who's going to be wound up like a too tight clock spring come Sunday afternoon. Oh, so is the whole city of Pittsburgh. Half the, you know, we're going to be wound up. You know, that's what happens when you send an Alabama boy to college at WVU, and you know, get him involved with a bunch of Pittsburgh kids. The next thing you know, he comes home and he's a Steelers fan, and he says things like Steelers. Yes, dear, you too. You're a Steelers fan too. Yes, you are. Backing up, though, let's go back to let's go to Jonathan Turley. Let's hear what Wayne was talking about.
What the president ordered in this case was a crime. Now, we can debate whether he had a good or bad motivation, but it was a crime. The federal law makes it clear you cannot engage in this type of surveillance, in a domestic surveillance operation, without committing a crime that you can go to jail for 5 years. Now, we can debate the wisdom of that. We can debate why the president may have done it. But in my view, the president committed a crime. And we have to deal with that as citizens. And unfortunately, you have to deal with that as members of Congress. It gives me no pleasure to say that. But it also strikes me as an alarming circumstance when the president can go on into a press conference and announce that he has violated a federal statute 30 times and promises to continue to do so until someone stops him. That's the most remarkable admission I've ever heard from a president of the United States.
Isn't it remarkable? I mean, this isn't Richard Nixon standing up in front of the blue curtains with the TV cameras going, "I am not a crook." This isn't that. This is a guy who stood before the American people and said, "I have peed all over the Constitution, and I dare you to stop me." I mean, this is Gary Hart saying, "I'm not fooling around with no beautiful blonde woman. Why don't you follow me around and find that, you know, you want to catch me? You follow me." They followed him. They caught him in the monkey business thing. And Gary Hart's presidential ambitions went down the toilet. Daggummit, he would have been a dandy. This is that. Preaching to the choir, I know. But this is the thing that we, not just you, this isn't your marching orders, I do it too. This is the stuff that we have to talk about in line at the grocery store. This is the stuff that you talk about in idle conversation at Target. This is the stuff that, do you go to church? Talk about it in the parking lot. Don't keep this stuff to yourself. You know, to run to the religious metaphor again, don't hide your light under a bushel. Or even a peck. Talk about it. Quit being afraid. The article that our friend Linda sent us from Boston, from Salon, there's a quote there. Two paragraphs in, an unnamed high-ranking Democratic Party official, quote, "The whole thing," talking about the NSA business, "the whole thing plays to the Republican caricature of Democrats that we're weak on defense and weak on security." That person is happy being a member of the marginalized party. I'm not. Neither are you. That person is happy. "Yeah, we'll just sort of lay here under our rock all salamander-like and wait for the Republicans to self-destruct, and then we'll come out and be triumphant and victorious." Uh-uh. If you want to win, you must fight. Dianne Feinstein hauling out all that crap about how, you know, the President of the United States deserves to have his own nominee on the Supreme Court. No. The deal that was struck between the Gang of 14 and the rest of the Senate was that you know, the Republicans wouldn't go nuclear and the Democrats would promise never ever to filibuster unless it was an extraordinary circumstance. Baby Samuel Alito is extraordinary. He is extraordinarily evil. And I don't know if you've seen the ads that are running on CNN, but they've got some guys. "I'm a Democrat, and I am positively shocked. I am dismayed by the way that they are talking about Samuel Alito." God, mister, go make a daisy chain or something somewhere. Go sing Kumbaya. And don't, please, don't be taken in with this foolishness from somebody like Fine. You know, "We will vote against him, and we will send a message by the number of no votes against Judge Alito that we'll be watching him." Screw. The only thing that is required to put Alito on the bench is a simple majority, 51-49, and that gets the job done. Now, from a procedural standpoint, you got to understand, before they can ever have an up or down vote on Judge Alito, before they can ever do that, there will be a motion to invoke cloture. Screwed up word. I don't think anybody else uses it for any other purpose in the entire freaking English language except in the Senate of the United States. And invoking cloture means we're going to end the debate. We're going to set a time limit. Democrats get to talk for 3 hours, Republicans get to talk 3 hours, and then we're going to have a vote. That's what cloture is. You have to invoke cloture before you can get to the up or down vote. So when you hear somebody like Dianne Feinstein saying, well, I will vote against him, and that will send a strong message. No. No. You vote against cloture. That's the definition of the filibuster. A cloture vote requires 60 senators. You stop it with 41. There are 44 Democratic members of the United States Senate, plus one independent, Jim Jeffords. We generally count him on our side. Ever since George Bush peed on him with that White House slur, backstab, whatever, you know, all the things that Bushes do best. We have 45 votes. If all 45 stand together, the Republicans cannot get Alito onto the bench of the Supreme Court. It won't happen. Can't happen. Now, you know that that Lieberman is Vichy. You know that he's a Quisling. It sounds like Feinstein is one, too. Okay, we're down to 43. Ben Nelson says there will be no filibuster, 42. You see how it goes? And the Republicans, bear in mind, are so damn scared, Bill Frist, the cat killer, would not even allow Senators Durbin and Leahy and Kennedy to speak on the floor. They muzzled them. They hauled out the plantation overseers and gagged those senators and would not allow them to speak on the floor with regard to the nomination of Samuel Alito. So Kennedy went to Harvard, Leahy spoke at Georgetown, and Dick Durbin spoke at Northwestern University. Durbin said, in particular, he said that this was yesterday, that he would vote against Alito. He said so many other senators intensely oppose Alito that they may have enough votes to sustain a filibuster against a conservative jurist. This is an article by Abdon M. Palash, sent to us by one of our good friends in the Tom Hartman chat room from Supreme Court Watch. This from the Chicago Sun-Times. Durbin said Judge Alito was extremely guarded in his answers. He wouldn't even say whether he was a Bruce Springsteen fan. I asked him about that, and his answer was, I am, to some degree. Are you kidding? Alito, a Springsteen fan? I mean, oh, what's the line I'm thinking of? The only salvation I can offer you is underneath this dirty hood, Thunder Road. No, I can't see Alito, who described Vietnam War protesters as being, you know, some people were doing some irresponsible things back then. You know, protesting the Vietnam War was irresponsible. Guess what? Protesting Iraq is irresponsible to Alito. Guess what? Objecting to the president's actions and saying that they are clearly criminal, as Jonathan Turley did, is irresponsible. You see? We've got quislings to worry about, but we can pull this off if we make sure that the Democrats have spine, okay? Ring it up if you want to, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no.
I can take you high.
Ranger, why do you have to remind people to be careful with fire?
Well, Mr. Mountain Lion, sometimes people need to be reminded about certain things, like not to run with scissors or let children play with wild dingoes, and to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you're saying is that people can be careless and forgetful?
Pretty much.
That makes me very sad.
Sounds like someone needs a hug.
Back off or I'll turn your hat into confetti!
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
Well, I was born an original sinner. I was born from original sin. And if I had a dollar bill for all the things I've done, there'd be a mountain of money piled up to my chin.
Hey!
Ooh,
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. Oh, let's see. Where to go? Well, the phone number, you heard that. There's another one, 304-658-3333. That's if you don't need us to pay the freight. Email's easy, bob@headonradio.com. Gotten a couple of interesting articles. I mentioned earlier, yeah, there's an audio tape, this from the Associated Press, an audio tape from Al-Qaeda's second-in-command, Ayman al-Zawahiri, was posted Friday on an Islamic website. But U.S. officials said the recording does not appear to have been made recently and may even date back years. It's apparently a tape that he made for a girlfriend or something because it's, like, got cool Islamic radical poetry in it, you know, about martyrs and stuff. It was unclear when the recording was made, although the poem referred to Afghanistan martyrs in the period during the Northern Alliance action against the Taliban that followed the September 11, 2001 attacks, the CIA official said. Oh, dear, a CIA official. These are the guys who, you know, why are they allowed to even speak in public? I mean, the Bush administration says they can't get anything right. But, you know, it's all deflection. An email from our friend Victor, a Duke University professor, says he is doubtful about Thursday's audio tape from Osama bin Laden. Bruce Lawrence has just published Messages to the World, the Statements of Osama bin Laden, a book translating bin Laden's writing. Lawrence said it was like a voice from the grave. He thinks bin Laden is dead and has doubts about the tape. Lawrence recently analyzed more than 20 complete speeches and interviews of the Al-Qaeda leader for his book. He says the new message is missing several key elements. But you understand, you know this. The Bolsheviks have to have bin Laden alive now because they have, now, this is twisted and weird paranoiac thinking, and it's just because I'm crawling around inside their sick and seedy little skulls. They have to have him alive because they weren't able to get him dead. You know what I mean? Agnes?
Well, evidently. I mean, the guy was on a dialysis machine, and he had money. He could have had a kidney transplant if it was available. Evidently, it wasn't. So chances are he is dead if he's gone through everything they say he has.
Well, what you've got to understand, though, is what else, you know, what happened over the weekend? It was Friday night last when the story was breaking on CNN, your world news leader, that missile attacks had killed Al-Qaeda number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and as a consequence of that, then it turned out that, no, we didn't kill Ayman al-Zawahiri. We killed 17 peasants. Oh, well, they were peasants, no big deal. Yeah, but, and they're literally rioting in their thousands in the streets of Pakistan, a nuclear-armed nation about whom we are not in the least bit worried. They're rioting in the streets in Pakistan because the United States now feels that it's absolutely okay and legal by them to fly into Pakistani airspace and just, you know, missile the hell out of any little village that we want to missile. And as long as we say that Al-Qaeda was there, I mean, this is worse than Kilroy, okay?
Well, evidently it's okay to outsource the jobs there, but then they want to kill them after they get them.
That's a hell of a note, Agnes.
Sorry. It's the truth.
Well, it kind of...
Did they seem to care that they were bombing someone who was supposed to be our ally?
Well,
no.
No, and they also managed not to bomb the Walmart factory either, so, yeah. This Professor Lawrence says that there's no Quran quotations in the tape, and that lends a bit of suspicion to it because, you know, I mean, my God, Osama bin Laden, you know, he's a devout Muslim, he's one of these Wahhabi weirdos, and so as a consequence, you know, that dude can't sneeze without reciting a verse from the Quran. And there was not a bit of it in the tape. Plus, it was only 10 minutes long. And, you know, the shortest that Osama had managed in the past was 18. So, there's everything in the world to point toward the idea that this is another Bush administration fraud. And this line, it carries me back to this line in this Salon article that Linda was kind enough to send us about how the beating on the NSA thing plays, quote, plays to the Republican caricature of Democrats that were weak on defense and weak on security. Let's examine that for just a minute, could we please? Who is stronger on defense? The person who defends the sanctity of the individual American home, or the person who says that we're all so terrified that no American home is safe from the intrusion of our own government? Which side is stronger on defense under that circumstance? Remember, they can't take us, even if they tried. They can't. They can't defeat us. And they understand the terrorist. 9/11 was a not so gentle reminder, a horrific reminder, a bloody reminder of the crap that we have been doing to them in one form or another for 50 freaking years. And generally, Western civilization for the last 1,000. I've said it before, I'll continue to say it, there is a long memory for revenge and retribution. It's genetic inside the human being. And there are people that have, in the Middle East, who have passed down from father to son, to father to son, to father to son, through countless generations. What? You know, 1,000 generations? 2,000 generations now? I don't know, do the math. Of what the Christians did to them in the Crusades. And that cycle has been regenerated thanks to George W. Bush. There are children unborn, there are children undreamt of, who will pay in blood, in life, for what George Bush has done since he became president, well, not became, but was made president of the United States. We're talking hundreds of years. We can't be defeated militarily, but we can defeat ourselves. Bruce Fein, the former deputy attorney general in the Reagan administration, discussed some of this today.
The principle that the president has established here, if gone unchecked, will, as Justice Robert Jackson said, lie around like a loaded gun and be utilized by any future incumbent who claims a need. And the history of power teaches us one thing, that if it's unchecked, it will be abused. There will be overreaching, whether or not you have a benevolent individual or someone who's malevolent. That is the nature of power. As Lord Acton said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we ought not to risk that when there are absolutely clear, legal, responsible ways to fight terrorism with all the aggressiveness that we need.
And pardon me for going all Quaker on you for a moment. One of the ways to fight terrorism is to stop creating the ground where it breeds. Now, that was Bruce Fein, like I said, in the Reagan administration, an assistant deputy attorney general, okay? That was not Lawrence Tribe at Harvard. That wasn't some out-there, wild, crazy, liberal lawyer. That was Bruce Fein? I remember him from the Iran-Contra days. He's no hippie, patchouli-smelling peacenik. I mean, this guy would probably has no problem whatsoever with the war on terror. But he does have a problem with an imperial president. And, well, he's so right. And it's something we've mentioned on this show. The next president gets the powers George Bush wants. The next president. And that should scare the right wing half to death. It scares me. I don't want a Democratic president, I don't want a Republican president to have the power to just say, I can break any law I want, and that is what is being said. I mean, that enables a president to commit, you know, go out and shoot people in the streets if he wants to. I did it because we're fighting terror, and I happen to be crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Let's take a break. This is Head On.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Fourth Estate Radio. Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's Executive Committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting. Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Screen door slams. Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me, and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night.
Back. Why do we say that? I went somewhere, you didn't. I got ice from a big orange. No, honey, it works better when you run the lever up.
I'm chained to my seat.
Yes, you are. no, seriously, I'm so glad to have you guys around on a Friday night. It makes things, it makes the prospect of Saturday and Sunday a little more tolerable. And sometime over the weekend, this show will be rebroadcast at radiopower.org. We run, the Tuesday through Friday schedule is 3 to 6, and then I think we're just sort of randomized on the weekend. So if you missed something, you can check it out there. Let's go back and finish up some of this sound. I want you to, the front end of what Bruce Fine had to say about George Bush.
We will be in a state of permanent hostilities against terrorism for our lifetimes and for the indefinite future. So the claimed authorities of the president are not temporary. They will not go away. They will become permanent fixtures of the political and legal landscape.
Did you get that? Permanent fixtures of the legal landscape. This is the front end of the imperial presidency. You know, and then, again, this is... I saw some other clip somewhere where one of these people who testified today said, you know, the question of whether or not George Bush has broken the law is something that a first-year law student could figure out. I kind of hate that. Whenever you ask legal questions of a legal expert, and they really want to make it understandable that it's so simple that virtually anyone could understand it, they always use, as an example, a first-year law student. And that's because first-year law students, they're barely into the process. Never mind that it takes a hell of a lot to get into law school. A first-year law student is, almost dumber than dirt. But, yeah. It is clear for anybody with, eyes, ears, a full set of, not even the complete set of sensory equipment that a human has. This guy is tap dancing on the Constitution of the United States. And still, we have people like Ben Nelson of Nebraska who says there will be no filibuster and he will, by God, vote for Alito. Oh, yeah. And I don't know what to make of that. I do not know. So all we can do is wait and hope. Lincoln Chafee, the Republican from Rhode Island, has said he has not made up his mind, but that he may vote no on Alito. Which means that if he intends to vote no on Alito, then we might be able to pull him over to our side to filibuster Sammy the Slime. And the one thing in the article that was sent to me from the Chicago Tribune that just really bugged me, and, Chicago, Illinois, So they're going to have a reference to their senatorial delegation, which is Dick Durbin and Barack Obama. I guess this is my only hope. Barack Obama is trying to play statesman. And in trying to play statesman, he's trying to play his cards close to his vest. Maybe this is the grand strategy, and we're all, you know, all us liberals, all us progressives, all us intelligent people are being just played for suckers because everybody's playing it close to the vest. Maybe, you know, maybe the Senate Democrats are so damn smart that they're keeping their powder dry until the very last minute, till they can really see the reds of the Republicans' eyes. And this thing is, and they're gonna smack Bill the Cat Killer Frist right between them with a big old honking filibuster and make him go nuclear. But what I'm getting at, Barack Obama says that he hasn't made his mind up yet. Barack Obama says he hasn't made his mind up yet. So maybe it's time to help Barack Obama make his mind up. Because in Bush world, which by definition is anything Bush wants, according to Sammy the Slime Alito, in Bush world, well, Barack Obama doesn't have a right to live. Really, seriously. This is a guy, remember, this is Alito is a guy who has said that it's okay to exhibit bias in hiring practices against a human being for having a different color skin. He wrote that, he said that, he meant that. Let's, we're at the bottom of the hour, but that's okay. We're going to bust this break. Let's go to the phones. Brad is with us calling from Germany. Hey, Brad, you're head on. Thanks for calling.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I was wide awake tonight, so I thought I'd listen to your show live for a change. Normally, I listen to it on the stream the next day from White Rose. And, boy, you and my lawyer are the two best guys out there.
Thank you. That's mighty high company for me. I thank the world of Mike.
Well, he's tremendous. He gave you a plug last night, too. Apparently, you sent him an email on something.
Yeah, we've got another mine disaster going here in West Virginia, and I just wanted to make sure he knew about it, because it happened. We found out about it after the show went off the air.
Yeah, that's why that's one of the reasons I called, because I hadn't heard another thing about it, and I can't get any news. Well, I get news from the net, but get a lot of mainstream media news too, and you know these things just aren't that important to people.
Well, you know it's kind of sickening the way the law works, the regulations on this, Brad. If anything less than five coal miners is not constituted as a disaster under Mine Safety and Health Administration rules.
Ah, geez. Well, that doesn't surprise me. I was with the government for a long time, Bob, and was a whistleblower myself. And I know how it works. And, you know, the bureaucrats in Washington, I think there's probably a lot of people that are down in the bowels of government that are as frustrated as we are. But, you know, if anybody speaks up, you know, that Bush busted half the unions up there when he formed that Homeland Security Agency.
You're absolutely right. He followed happily in the footsteps of Ronald Reagan. Well, you know, you talk about whistleblowers. One of the most prominent whistleblowers in recent memory is a fellow by the name of Jack Spadaro. He was in charge of the Mine Safety and Health Administration's training program. And he tried to bust some of these Massey Energy mines after they had a huge Blackwater blowout in Martin County, Kentucky. It was awful. I mean, entire rivers turned solid black.
Wouldn't surprise me, Bob.
And he called them on it, Brad, and they came down on him like a hammer.
Well, the thing is, these inspector generals, too, you know, in the federal government. Who polices the police is the question. These guys that are supposedly the internal police of these various agencies they have only one purpose, and that is to cover for the secretary. And yeah, they can say all they want about these guys being there to, you know, are independent and this and that, but as long as the various secretaries in these agencies are writing their evaluations, and they get their bonuses based on that. These guys never go against the administration and the whole inspector general system. That was one of my big problems, and one of the things that I fought hard with my 8 years as a whistleblower to get the inspector general's thing cleaned up. And Gore actually called on me at one of his town meetings when they were trying to reinvent government. And I got a chance to, like, blow him up on, well, it was on C-SPAN and a couple other things, which made me persona non grata forever at that agency. And even when they were ordered by the Justice Department to settle my case, they didn't, so the Justice Department did.
Wow.
It's a sad situation in Washington. One of the things I did say to Agnes when I called in is, you know, being here in Mainz, I work right across the river from where the Americans have now consolidated. And I have occasion to talk to some of these guys. And, you know, we have an all-volunteer army now, and
right.
These guys, a lot of them, have the blinders on. And I'm not convinced that when it's time for him to go, even if we can impeach the bastard, I'm not convinced that when it's time to go, he's going to go.
Well, see, that's the thing that I share your concern, Brad, and I'll take it back one step. I mentioned last night, and I don't think I fully fleshed it out, but if you consider the impeachment process itself, you know, that's the bill of impeachment is handed down from the House, and it's tried in the Senate with the full Senate sitting as a jury.
Right.
The presiding officer in that trial is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who is, of course, you know, a Bush toady.
Oh, God.
And if you can imagine that scenario, that happy scenario where we get the bill of impeachment and we get it tried, and at the end of the trial, the evidence is all in, it's dead to rights. All has to happen, Brad, all that has to happen is for one Republican senator to raise his hand and look at John Roberts and say, I make a motion for acquittal.
And with all that, he could...
And Roberts could say...
He could drop it?
And Roberts could say, granted, and it would all be over.
Oh, jeez. Well, that's pretty pathetic. The thing that I worry about is these guys, these military guys, he's their commander-in-chief. And if all of a sudden he said it's absolutely necessary for me to stay on... I have no doubt that some of these guys, if given the opportunity, would have no trouble firing on Americans if we took to the streets and stuff. It'd be another Kent State, except it'd be worse.
Well, part of what went down with Katrina, if you recall some of the news coverage with that, the New Orleans police were quite surprised to be traveling down the streets in the French Quarter and see Blackwater operatives.
Yeah, you know.
It was Brad, it was dress rehearsal.
You know, we're not unlike the Nazis. They had two armies, too. They had the SS, and then they had the regular German army.
Right.
And the German army, their excuse always was, well, we swore an oath and, you know, this and that, but these guys in our army are no different than with Black Hawk, you know, and some of these big contractors. I mean Blackwater out there, they've got the additional support who don't even operate under any laws. I mean,
well, right, and I mean that's the whole experiment has the whole paradigm has been worked out and made whole inside Iraq. I mean, there are 55,000 mercenaries in Iraq who operate outside any sort of military structure. Even if the military behaved itself under the scenario that you have voiced your fears over, the Blackwater boys are a private army.
Yeah, which has was the SS and the SA before them in Germany, and I worry. I'm glad I'm over here. I tell you the truth. Although I thought also that, you know, getting an overseas call tonight, we'd give the NSA a chance to listen into your show and see what good work you do.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, Brad, and I hope they're enjoying themselves. You know, one other thing. To bring this thing full circle, I don't know if you caught Mitch's phone call from California earlier in the program, but he was talking about these executive orders that George Bush has already signed. And some of those things, Brad, make your fears much more palpable because, among other things, they suspend posse comitatus.
Yeah, well, hey, it's pretty much been suspended. The way I see it, if they got Blackwater already in the streets, and you know, I worry. I've got children, and I'm going to have grandchildren, and I don't intend to come back to the country anytime soon. I'm very happy over here, and watching it from a distance, I do get home to visit family and stuff. Although, probably because I remain active on the internet and stuff, and call in to guys like you, I'll probably find my name on a no-fly list the next time when I go over to Frankfurt Airport. You go and get on a plane, go home, visit my dad and my family. But yeah, it's a concern, and I just did want to call and say that your voice is heard around the world. I was up at the middle of the night here, it's about 3:30, and couldn't sleep, and I said, damn, I think I'll listen to Bob Live for a change instead of just the streaming. And so I just wanted to call in and say to both you and Agnes, keep up the good work. And Bob, get louder. Get louder. Get angrier. You know?
I know what you... Well, see, that's part and parcel of having Agnes here next to me. You know, she looks at me, and during the break she says things like, Bob, your blood pressure, you know.
Yeah, really. Well, I'm always afraid that old Mike's gonna pop a muscle or something one of these nights too. I mean, he gets himself riled. He's like a old Southern preacher, you know. Anyhow, listen, I want you guys to keep up the good work and know that you're being heard out here. And I passed along the link to a number of friends of mine.
Well, thank you so much.
So that, you know, I don't know if any of them are actually listening or not, but I make a point, you know, since we found Air America and White Rose about 6 months ago, I turned off CNN. I don't get CNN International. Well, I have it here on my TV, but the only news I watch is I watch the German news and find out what's going on here. But CNN International, which used to be my only English language channel, I don't think I've turned them on in 3-4 months, to tell you the truth. And I get all my news from you guys and the internet and some of the blogs that are out there, Huffington and so.
Well, you know, there's not much point to CNN anymore. I used to work there, and it's not the place that I used to work. They're desperately trying to become more and more like Fox, and I can understand completely why you would just walk away from it.
Well, this guy, I've never seen this guy, Glenn Beck.
Yeah,
I've never seen him, but the things that you guys have played from him are absolutely, you know, outrageous, and that these guys pass these, you know, Bill Bennett, he's one that I do know of from
a
long time. He was in government forever, and he was in government while I was there, and you know, this guy, these guys are all preaching about how we should behave and act, and on the other hand, here's this guy with a major gambling problem. He's going to be a spokesman for what's moral. And,
oh yeah, sitting naked in the private room at the Las Vegas casino, you know, playing slots and eating Cheetos.
And,
no kidding. And beyond that, the whole idea that, you know, this should be enough to keep you off the public airwaves anywhere with any corporation. The idea of saying that if we abort all the black babies, crime will go down in America.
Yeah, God, yeah. It's just, and that's just dismissed. That was just dismissed. They played it, you know, the only people that talked about it were you guys. I remember, oh, man. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Well, anyhow.
Well, I do appreciate the call so much, Brad. Anytime you're feeling sleepless, feel free to ring us up.
But you're more likely to get emails from me because I do try and listen. I try and hit Malloy. I'm generally up by 4 anyhow, even though I'm no longer working. And I pick up Malloy live a lot of times. But by the time he comes on, you're off. So then I catch you streaming the next day. And you guys really are the two best ones out there. I don't know why. You know, you ought to send a letter to Air America and ask him for Springer's slot because he's a he's a waste of time over there. And we need to get all you guys. We ought to have an Air America party.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of maybe doing one of those cardboard signs and standing by the side of the road, Brad, that says, you know, "Will Air America for food?"
Yeah, really. Yeah. Well, they have a lot of good people on there, but their daytime stuff is eaten up with, you know, Springer's okay. I don't want to knock Jerry. He's, you know, he's okay, but I mean, we need, you know, more radical people that, you know, that are telling it like it is, and this, you know, soft soap kind of approach. Just, you know, even Franken is a little too soft for me sometimes, although he's getting better. So
yeah, he makes me laugh, and laughter is valuable in this fight, Brad. No doubt about it.
Yeah, he's getting better. So anyhow, I want to wish you guys all the best, and keep up the good work, and. Next time I'm having a sleepless night, I'll give you all another call.
I hate for you to go sleepless, but we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks so much, Brad. Anytime.
Right.
Take care.
Now.
Thanks for the call. Okay, see, I'm new enough in this game that I'm still just, and, you know, it's the whole non-technical Bob thing. I just got a call from Germany. Do you believe it? Yes, dear.
And Wales.
And Wales. And Australia.
Exactly.
Still waiting for that Japan phone call.
Don't push your luck.
I tell you what, let's knock off for a second, take a quick break. Big Orange. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit StrokeAssociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Agnes is dancing again. He's such an 80s babe. 13 and a half minutes before the hour. There has been some mention made. It was mentioned early in the show, and Brad was kind enough to mention it as well. Yeah, we got another mine tragedy on our hands. I hope it's not a mine tragedy. I hope it's a mine happy ending. Another, well, okay, slowly but surely, and walk through the process. The Sago disaster was created by virtue of the criminal negligence of the International Coal Group. The International Coal Group partnered in a separate situation. The International Coal Group partnered to purchase Horizon Energy. They partnered with Massey Energy to purchase Horizon Energy. Those were the guys who had their pensions stolen from them and their health care taken away, you know, women taken away from, removed from their chemotherapy, that kind of stuff, wives, daughters. And Massey, you know, ICG, I don't fully understand the entire slithering, mating, snake-like, twisted machination that is their partnership with Massey. But yeah, we got another mine horror. But like I told Brad, Mine Safety and Health Administration regulations state that it's only called a mine disaster if there are five or more miners involved. In this case, there are only two. It happened last night in Logan County, West Virginia. Arakoma Coal, a wholly owned subsidiary of Massey Energy. Another case of criminal negligence. A mine fire. There are two places on Earth, I think, that a fire is most horrifying, and that is aboard a ship at sea and deep in the bowels of the Earth. For similar reasons. In this case, there's a conveyor belt that carries the coal out of the mine as it's dug. And this conveyor belt caught fire. Our friend Sue on Big Coal River was kind enough to send me the story last night after I'd already gotten off the air. There was a crew of 14 in the mine, if I understand correctly. 12 got out. 2 are in the sterile and euphemistic language of the business, unaccounted for. They were unaccounted for last night. They have been unaccounted for all day. They are, as of my last check of local news, still unaccounted for. From the evening news at one of our television stations, WCHS in Charleston, authorities say a conveyor belt caught fire deep inside the Arakoma mine in Melville, Logan County. The two miners got separated from a 12-member crew in the smoke-filled mine shaft. Rescue crews say their efforts to put out the fire and increase visibility in the mine are working. Of course, last night, the story I got from Sue on Big Coal River said the fire was out. By this morning, it was the fire is smoldering. And as of this report, they're still trying to put the fire out. You know, that's a problem with a fire in a coal mine. You know, coal burns. Anderson Cooper hasn't found Logan County, West Virginia yet. It was mentioned, but I don't know. Am I wrong? Was Anderson there yet? Has he gotten there yet? Is Geraldo at the Driftmouth yet? Oh, this one's being played much more close to the vest. Doug Conaway, West Virginia Mine Safety Director, we've been pretty successful with our firefighting efforts. They're gradually decreasing. It's slight, but they're decreasing, he said, talking about carbon monoxide levels. Governor Manchin. Governor Manchin said that, let's see, what was the exact phrase? Time not on side of mine search. And, of course, I would be remiss if I did not point out that this is, of course, another non-union mine.
Well, everybody's got to work. Everybody's got to feed their family.
Sure.
But the one thing that a lot of people need to remember, and my dad used to tell me this all the time, worked in the mines most of his life. He started working there when he was 12 years old. One man cannot go against the company. But if you stand together, which is a union, then you have a good chance of beating it. They're safer. They're safer mines. And anybody that goes down in a hole knows nothing's safe.
No, you just, well...
But at least they make it to where they know how the equipment's working. It's not wobbly. It's not used up. It's not a piece of crap. And they will stand up for the miners' rights. They stand together as a brotherhood. So remember, the unions are the ones who brought you the 8-hour workdays.
The weekend.
The weekend.
Labor Day.
The decent wage, because I come from a family not so far removed from a time to when you didn't get that. And if you didn't do what the company said, then you were out on your ear.
Well, this is another non-union mine. This is another place where profit takes precedence over life. And once again, we've got, you know, they're gathered at a little Baptist church near the mine. And they're waiting and they're worrying. And somewhere in America, somebody just walked out of the room and didn't turn the light out. And they guaranteed that somewhere, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Virginia, they guaranteed that somewhere a miner will die. Because increased consumption creates increased demand. And the faster you have to mine it, the more likely it is, without a union, that people are going to die. It is a brutal sort of arithmetic that we in these hills have known for a long, long time. And it looks like, you know, with folks like Bush in the White House, it's a brutal sort of arithmetic that we will keep on doing. And that's just pathetic. You gotta kind of wonder. You remember Dick Cheney's secret energy task force? You think that Don Blankenswine from Massey Energy wasn't in on that? You think the whole business with mountain range removal wasn't discussed in those secret energy task force meetings? It wasn't just coal. It wasn't just oil. It wasn't just gas. It was all of them. Jack Abramoff was on Georgia's transition team in 2000, and now he says he never even met the man. All this slime surrounds this presidency. And they care not for the hell that they make for other people. I hope by the time Monday rolls around that I can report that those miners are safe and sound and at home and in the bosom of their loved ones. I hope, I pray, meditate, send good thoughts. But because organizations like Massey are, in fact, criminally negligent, the odds are, well, it won't be a disaster. At least we know it won't be a disaster. Because there's less than 5 miners involved. Yeah, there's one to fix. Listen, everybody, didn't mean to end it on a downer. I apologize. The upside is, we get to have another run at it Monday night. And I, for one, look forward to it. As does Agnes. We look forward to all of them. Hope you do too, because we do appreciate your time. and your energies. The show tonight, of course, was produced by she who spoke only a short few moments ago, my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Our studio setup, our wonderful, fabulous studio setup here in our secure, undisclosed location was engineered by Randy Kerbway. It was the stream is maintained by our dear, dear friend, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And best wishes, by the way, Katie. Let's see. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And always, always, RMR. It's all for you.